Now it's time to, as we get to share in some of the thoughts that our Sylvia has. Sylvia, it's only been with us maybe 3 years, something like that, when we were only like 4 years old. So she's about a year old when we found her, I think. She was, you know. No, I don't know how long, but maybe about 3 years, you think? And she just, God has just picked her right up and says, we're going to use you, Sylvia. And wouldn't you know, find out her birthday's almost the same as Reverend Ida Hill's birthday. And my daughter's birthday, and Jack Durbin's birthday that was here, and Reverend Rose, and all the ones that were workers in this church. And the one that was standing up here like this, that I thought, what the heck ails him? All the workers in the church were Capricorns when I came here. And what are you?
Capricorn.
And this is our Sylvia, Angel Sylvia.
Millie keeps after me to talk, and I'm like, I don't want to. but I figure I'm amongst friends. And gosh, Mary, thank you so much for that song. You mentioned it was your mother's birthday on Monday. It was my father's birthday on Monday. And the song you sang was one of my mother's favorite songs. And she used to sing it every year at deer camp to my father. So it just really was a special touch for me. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Wow.
And it ties in with, you know, with what I'm going to talk about tonight. I've been thinking all week, what can I talk about? And my father just kept popping into my mind. And so since it was his birthday Monday, I thought, I'm going to talk about my father.
Yeah.
What better, you know, subject to talk about? And, you know, I don't know, like most teenagers and kids growing up, you know, they don't think they have anything in common with their parents. And, you know, you just find conflict all the time. But as I've grown older, and since my father's gone now, I've sat and reflected back and on our life together, and I see now how much we had in common. And so I just want to share with you guys tonight a little bit of his history and try to tie it in with how he's really affected my life and the true treasures and gifts that he's given me, and I hope I can make him proud. So, like I mentioned, his birthday was Monday, August 17th. He'd be 94 years old if he was still with us now. And Millie, when I first met Millie, one of the first things she taught me was, you pick your parents. And I'm like, there's no way. You know, I wouldn't have picked these parents for anything in the world. I mean, I just, you know, I wouldn't have picked them. Because I kept asking myself my whole life growing up, why did God put me in this family? I never felt connected with my family in so many ways. But Millie, you know, she's like, no, you pick your parents. And so, you know, for years and years, I sat and, you know, thought, you know, why them? And so now, in the 3-4 years that I've known Millie, I've taken a whole different shift on my thought process and thinking, why did I pick them? You know, what was my lesson to be learned by my mom and my dad? And over the past few years, you know, I've just done so much soul searching. And my father came from very meager beginnings. He was born in Morton, Minnesota. And my grandfather was an immigrant to this country. And so he came through Ellis Island. They came with just the things on their back. Very, very poor people. And my grandfather and grandmother married, and they moved to Nebraska and homesteaded there. I think they had like 3,000 or 4,000 acres of property. Well, then all of a sudden, you know, they had 6 children, and the Depression hit. And my father was 14 years old, and because there was a drought and the Depression, he had no other choice but to leave home. And I mean, you can imagine a 14-year-old boy leaving home, first time ever. He just had a 6th grade education, and he was out on the road, and he would work for a place to sleep or a bowl of food or just, you know, anything to just get him through the day. And I sit and I look at that and I think, you know, I didn't appreciate that, you know, when I would hear these stories as a child. But I've got grandsons that are 14 and granddaughters that are 14, and I can't imagine them out in the world today, and you know, asking for someone to give them something to eat or finding a place to sleep for the night. And, you know, with, you know, I think about my father, 14 years old, you know, hopping on a train or, you know, thumbing down the road. And, you know, he had to have been terrified to do that. But yet, then I'd look at the flip side and I think, boy, what strong character that built in him. And I didn't appreciate it. When I heard those stories at first, I thought, oh, well, he was poor. And, you know, I kind of looked down on it. And now, of course, I slapped myself in the face several times over that because, you know, he really, I mean, to do that was just an amazing, amazing feat for him. And then I look at myself, you know, he was an independent man. And when I was 18 years old, I left home. And I was the first one in my family. I'm the youngest child of four. And I'm the first one in my family to just leave home. And my brothers and sisters, they all stayed on or they went in the Navy, or my sister stayed home till she was 24. And so I kind of picked up on that little independent nature of his, and I was ready to cut out into the world on my own. Not at 14, they wouldn't have let me, but at 18, I was ready to fly the coop, you know, and set off on my own mission in life. And I think, you know, I get that from my dad, not my mom. My mom was a little more homebound, but I got that from him, and I always felt this sense of adventure in him. Well, I always had that. I wanted to get out, and I wanted to find things on my own. I remember getting my first job, and I was 16 years old. I was a car hop, and I would come home late at night, and I would be ornery the next day and stuff, and he would get all over me, and I'm just like, you know, just stay out of my space, leave me alone. I'm growing here, and just let me grow up, just let me do my own thing. And he always wanted to put his thumb on me. And now I look back, he was protecting me. That's all he was doing, is just showing his love for me and protecting me. But at the time, I thought that he was trying to put me down and not let me discover things on my own. So I really resented him for that. And then about 17 years old, we had a huge falling out. We had a big, big major fight. And we, long story short, I mean, we didn't speak for nearly 20 years. And it's such a tragedy. You know, I sit and look back on that. And 20 years of my life without my father's, you know, paternal influence was really heart-wrenching. And I can never get that back. And I listened to him years later when we got talking again. He started telling me stories how the same thing happened to him with his mother. And they got in this big fight, and that's one of the reasons he also left home. You know, it was the depression and things too, but that's why he left. He got in this big, you know, confrontation with his mom. So I'm sitting there thinking, okay, you know, we're independent together. We both are so strong-minded, and we stand up for our rights, but yet sometimes, you know, you can stand up too strong, and that gets in your own way. And he traveled, like I was saying, you know, he was off on his own. He traveled for years and years, and he finally settled down in Utah. And that's where my Aunt Rose lived. And he was living with her, and he loved to dance. My dad was a real socialite, and people have told me I'm quite sociable to a certain extent. And so I feel like I get that from him also. Well, they met at this open-air dance. They used to have these open-air dance halls. You probably remember those, don't you, Millie? The open-air dances. And they met, and it was like love at first sight. My mother was dating his cousin, and he introduced them, and they just clicked it together. And I don't know if any of you guys have ever been to the Dares karaoke parties, but one night I was there, and I'm flipping through the book, and there's this song called The Tennessee Waltz. Well, that was the first song my parents ever danced to together. And they fell in love, and a few months later, they eloped. And they were married for 50 years. You know, so, you know, it was a love that just, you know, people would meet them and they'd say, I've never seen a couple so in love. You know, your parents love each other so much. And they just, you know, they stuck by each other's side and, you know, through good times, through bad times. And let me just backtrack just a little bit. My dad, when they were first married, he'd lost his job and my mother was pregnant. And so my grandfather says, come to Nebraska, I'll give you the farm. So he thought, well, I'll go to Nebraska. So he goes to Nebraska. When he gets there, he gets a message saying that the job that he'd been wanting back in Utah had been offered to him. So back to Utah they went. And they traveled, you know, back to Utah. That's where my mother's family was. She comes from a family of 14 children. And so it was really hard for her to think about leaving her family behind. And so when Dad got the message that, you know, he was going to get his job, he decided to turn around and go back so she could be with her family. He was always thinking of other people. And this job that my dad took, I mean, it was at a steel mill. And it wasn't the most prestigious job. It wasn't a high-paying job, but it was a job that gave him security and contentment. I look back, and as a child, I kept thinking the only thing I could think of is, you know, every third week, us kids had to be quiet around the house because Dad was working graveyard, and you know, Mom would get mad at us. I'm like, you know, we're just playing, and we're kids. Let us be, you know. And I look and I think, guy, you know, I want to just slap myself now. My father worked so hard; he would work day shift one week, swing shift the next week, and graveyard the next. Now, I couldn't do that. I mean, I've worked all those shifts in different jobs before, but to rotate them like that on a weekly cycle, you've got to have endurance like, you know, none other. And my father would do this, and he did this for the betterment of his family. And even though it wasn't a high-paying job, he was determined because he didn't have an education that he was going to give us kids a good education. He would save money, and we had a big farm. We grew our own vegetables. We had fruit orchards. We would grow our own fruit. He would sell fruit. The money that he would get from selling the fruit and vegetables, he would put aside in an education fund so he could send us kids to private Catholic school. And at the time, of course, there again, you know, I'm thinking, I don't want to go to private Catholic school. I live in Utah, you know. Everybody looks down at you going to private Catholic school, you know. You're like super minority, you know. And I wanted to be in school, you know, with my neighborhood friends. And so, you know, we squabbled about that. And my brothers and my other sister, you know, we'd all fight about that. But, you know, I look now and I think he was just thinking of giving us the best that he could, because he only got a sixth grade education. He wanted us to have the best of the best. And, you know, I just, you know, when this all shifted, it's just, he just always, you know, was just always on the go, trying to make things better for the family. We grew our own chickens, we had our own cows, we had horses. You know, I mean, I lived organically growing up, and back then it wasn't the fashionable thing to do. Now, you know, everything's organic, everything's green, and that's just how I was raised, not appreciating. I didn't eat a slice of grocery bread out of the store until I was probably about 13 or 14 years old. My mother baked bread every single day. Did I appreciate it? No. You know, I mean, I just, you know, I sit and think, what a brat I was. You know, I was really a bratty kid. But my brothers, you know, we've talked about this, and, you know, they all felt the same way, you know. So I don't feel like I'm the only kid in the world that ever felt like that. But I sit and I correlate that now with my kids, you know, and I think I've given my kids the best of the best that I could provide for them, as my father tried to provide the best for us at the time. And, you know, it's interesting now that my children are older, we sit and have discussions. Well, Mom, remember when I wanted this and you wouldn't give me that? And, you know, so I think every parent goes through these dilemmas. You know, we do the best we can, and for some reason it's never quite good enough, you know, when the kids are smaller. But as they get older and they get children, then you start seeing things in a whole different light. That's when I started noticing things different, as soon as I saw my own kids. And there were so many life lessons that my dad taught me. I mean, you know, when he sent us to that Catholic school, the school was right down the street from Brigham Young University. So we were really surrounded, you know, in a heavily populated, strong Mormon community. And it taught me, the most important thing it taught me is, you know, people can be very discriminating. And now that I, you know, I didn't see that at the time, but my father, when he was 14, he set out in the world on his own. And he had to learn to accept everybody for who they were. He couldn't discriminate against people because he was hungry and he was tired. And he had to take what he could get where he could get it. And when I was going to that Catholic school, I mean, I had to bite my lip a lot, bite my tongue a lot, because people do mean things. It doesn't matter if it's to a child or an adult. They can do really mean things and say mean things and treat you harshly just because you're not the same as them. So growing up, I always, you know, I just thought, you know, how can anybody treat people with such anger, you know? I mean, we're all the same. We're all loving children of God. And the one thing the Catholic school did give me is a really good spiritual base. I mean, I really learned that, you know, God truly does love us. And, I mean, I went to Mass every day of my life. Not every Sunday, but every day. And it was instilled in me how much God loved me. And even though I didn't like being in that Catholic school, if I got anything out of it, that's, you know, what I walked away with completely is, you know, I knew God loved me. And there would be times in my life when, you know, when things were going down the wrong road, and I just knew that all I had to do was reach up and ask God for his help, and he was always there. One time I was in a car accident, and I knew I was going to die in this accident, and I just remember letting go of the steering wheel, just saying, let God, you know, God, let your will be done. And I came out of that accident unscathed. I mean, not a scratch, not a bruise, not a bump, and I had glass through my hair, and, you know, I should have been dead. So, you know, even though my dad put me in that situation where it was hard, and I don't know if he even realized how much he was going to be helping me for my future, putting me there, but it really did make me aware of each person's individuality. And so when I got married and we had the opportunity to move away from Utah, I said, yeah, I want to do this. I want to move, you know. And I'm not putting Utah down, because Utah is a beautiful place and I've got beautiful friends and family there. But I wanted to raise my children in an area where they wouldn't be discriminated against. And I wanted them to learn all cultures and all religions. And I didn't want them to look down on somebody because of the color of their skin or if they had an accent or, you know, where they were from. And so we moved to Arizona. That wasn't such a good move. And but when we had the opportunity to move to San Diego, you know, we jumped right on it. And it's been probably the greatest move of my life living here in San Diego. I've met so many great people here. And I'm just grateful that I came here with an open mind instead of a closed mind. I remember, I couldn't have done that without growing up in the environment that I did. I could have been very closed-minded. And another thing my father taught me is we have to always look out for each other and help each other when someone asks for your help. And a tragic thing happened to my parents. My father retired from the steel mill, and they owned their property, they owned their home free and clear, and some con men came through town, some investors, and they conned several people in the area out of their properties, and my parents happened to be one of them. And my dad called me and in tears, and I'd never seen my father cry, I'd never heard him cry, and he calls me and he goes, can you help me? I didn't know how to help him. I mean, I didn't know anything about real estate. You know, I didn't know the first thing about what to do for him. And they ended up losing their home, losing their land, losing everything they'd ever worked for. It was tragic. And now I'm in real estate, and I just find it so hard to imagine that anyone in this profession that has to take these, you know, oaths of ethics could actually go in and wipe people out of their fortunes and their homes. But there are people out there like that. But I chose not to resent these people for what they did, but to, you know, just send them love. But my father took it differently, and when he lost everything, you know, physically that he had worked for, he felt like he had become lesser of a man. And he said to me, he says, you know, I've been a good person. I've been a good dad. I've been a good husband, a good father. You know, why did God do this to me? And on August 17th, 1995, that was my parents' 50th wedding anniversary party. And my dad had been very, very ill, and he didn't want to go to the party, but we talked him into it. And he'd been, you know, really, he was getting really ornery. And so I took him off to the side, and we went together, just me and him, just having a private talk. And I said, "Dad, what are you so ornery about? You know, this is supposed to be a happy time. You and Mom have been together for 50 years. You've had great years together." And he goes, "Great years," and he goes off on me, you know. "God did this and God did that, and I hate God, and I just want to die." And I said, "Those are pretty strong words." And he says, "I want to just die. I'm sick and I'm tired of life. It's brought me nothing but grief." And I, you know, I'm just looking at him and I'm like, "Well, you know, I'm sorry I brought you so much grief." Once again, I turn it back to me. And then he feels all bad. And I says, "You know," I said, "God didn't do this to you." And I said, "You've got to understand that God loves you and he's there for you. And all you have to do is, you know, just ask him to come back into your life." And he says, "I'm never going to go to church ever again a day in my life. Don't tell me I have to go to church." And I said, "You don't have to go to church, Dad." And he goes, "I just want to die." I just kept saying, "I just want to die. I just want to die." Here's this party going on, and my dad's sitting over here with me. "I just want to die. I'm not going to go in there." And I said, "Let's go to the party. Have a good time. You know, put on a face if you have to for Mom, you know." I said, "Well, let's go have a good time." And so after the party, the next day I got up with him and we're having coffee, and he says, "You tell me I have to forgive God. I'm never going to forgive God." He, you know, and I says, "Daddy," I says, "You know, God loves you." I don't know where this came from, because I've never been a preacher type person, but I says, "You know, you just have to talk to him." And I says, "You want to die? You want to go home? You want to go back to your mom and dad?" I says, "Just ask God to bring you home." I says, "But you know what? You're so damn ornery right now. He doesn't want you in his house." And I said, "You know, you gotta, you know, straighten up a little bit here, you know." And he goes, "Well, that's kind of mean. If God loves me, he should take me however I want." And I said, "Well, sure he will." I says, "But you know, when someone's ornery, do you want to be around him?" And he goes, "No." And I says, "Well, then why does God want to be around you when you're so ornery?" And so I told him, he says, "Well, I'm not going to go to church." And I said, "You don't have to go to church." I says, "You know, your favorite place is your garden. It always has been." And I says, "Why don't you just go out in your garden and you just, you know, say what you have to say. Just unload. Every grief you have, every bit of hatred you have, every bit of anger you have, just let it out." I says, "You won't find a better listening ear than God." And I says, "You know, you'll find a lot of relief in that." And he looked at me and he goes, "Where'd you learn all this stuff? You know, who you been talking to?" I said, "I don't know where it's coming from." But so anyway, I came back home with my family, and about 2 days later my mom calls me and she goes, "I think your dad's flipped out." And I said, "What do you mean you think dad's flipped out?" And she goes, "Sylvia, he's out in his garden every day just talking to himself. He's just talking to nobody." And you know, I just started crying. I thought, wow, you know, he listened to me. And I didn't think my dad ever listened to me, you know. I know sometimes I didn't listen to him, so it was really nice to know that I was, you know, that he heard what I had to say. And it was just, let's see, that was in August 17th. On November 2nd, I got a phone call that my father had passed away. And when I got the phone call, I wasn't surprised. And I was sad that he was gone, because we hadn't had enough good years together. I mean, like I mentioned, we spent 20 years hardly speaking to each other. That's a long time. I had two kids in that time. He barely knew my children. I can never get those years back. So when he passed on, I just thought, I'm never going to be able to get those years back. I'm never going to be able to share with him and have those, make new memories with him. And then I found this church. And it was like a homecoming to me. I mean, I always knew that, you know, this wasn't all there is. And when I'd hear people talk about, oh, this is all there is, and there's, you know, no life after death, and blah, 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 it just seems so hard and cruel. And then when I found Fraternal Spiritualists, and I found Millie, and I learned that you pick your parents, and that we can talk to these people after they're gone, I'm just like, wow, I get a second chance. I get a second chance with my dad. And I really do get a second chance with him. And his picture sits on my piano. And every day I walk by that picture and I say hi to my dad every morning and every night. I say goodnight to him. And I know he's there with me, and he's here with me right now. I know he is. And I just feel so fortunate to look back over my years and see all the sacrifices that this man gave for me. And I know now that I can thank him. He's hearing me, and he walks with me every single day. And he's helping me. And even though he lost everything in a real estate transaction, I know he's working with me to make everything I can with my real estate transactions. I feel him with me as I'm walking the streets and talking to people. And it's just so fulfilling, and it makes me feel so complete. And I found this wonderful poem about what makes a dad, and I just want to share that with you before I close here tonight. What makes a dad? God took the strength of a mountain, the majesty of a tree, the warmth of a summer sun, the calm of a quiet sea, the generous soul of nature, the comforting arm of night, the wisdom of the ages, the power of the eagle's flight, the joy of a morning in spring, the faith of a mustard seed, the patience of eternity, the depth of a family need. Then God combined these qualities. When there was nothing more to add, he knew his masterpiece was complete, and so he called it Dad. Thank you for giving me your time.
One of the best books that you can ever read is allowing yourself to go back and look at your life. You thought a lot, didn't you, Dennis, when she was going through that? Sent you through memory lane, didn't it? You know, I could look out and see some of you with hitting memory lane as she was talking. One of the nicest things that you can do for yourself is what she just did. But one of the nicest things that we can do for ourselves is listen as somebody shares their life. You can learn so much, can't you? Thank you, Sylvia. That little time.